Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Hubris is a word that comes to mind. Gutsy, too, but also potentially game-changing if it works out. Kodak announced today it intends to revolutionize the desktop printer market. Only problem is, it's barely in the market. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Today's the 6th of February. Great to have you here on this Tuesday. Kodak's troubles have been fairly well documented. The company was late getting to the digital photography party. Then about 3 years ago, bet everything on a move away from film. So I suppose you could call today's announcement the logical conclusion, a new breed of printers to capture the digital picture enthusiast. The end result's by no means certain. Hewlett-Packard owns something like 45% of the desktop printer market. But Kodak's come up with a twist it hopes will carry the day, as Ashley Miltite reports.
Kodak is turning the traditional printer sale model on its head. Normally, printers are relatively cheap. It's the price of ink cartridges that hammers consumers. Kodak is selling more expensive printers, but cartridges will go for half the cost of rivals. Broker Ulysses Yannis says though the Kodak ink is fantastic quality and the printers are easy to use...
Forget the convenience, forget the quality. The number one factor is cost.
And if you invest in a Kodak printer, he says, your snaps come to 10 cents each, 5 cents cheaper than an online developing service. For keen photographers, those savings will add up. Charles LeCompte of Lyra Research agrees Kodak has a good chance of luring customers with its highly competitive product. He says the company needs to.
They've been selling off arms and legs and everything else they can to generate the cash to support this effort. So this thing basically is a bet the ranch proposition for them.
But Ulysses Yannis says the company's already bet the ranch by sinking those hundreds of millions into product development. If it fails, it'll be disappointing, but not disastrous.
The reason for that is they haven't built plants to make the printers. Somebody else makes them for them.
Plants and labor are outsourced. Kodak's dual focus these days is photo kiosks and commercial printing. But Yannis says it could well expand because the new line of printers and cartridges has the potential to be a big earner. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Today's news from Kodak would be perfect insider trading bait. Somebody at Kodak who knew what was about to be announced, buying shares before the public found out. And as it happens, there's insider trading news today. The SEC confirms it's looking into allegations of insider trading by hedge funds and other clients of big Wall Street brokerage houses. The New York Times broke the story this morning that the feds are looking for evidence brokers are giving advance notice to their favored clients when a mutual fund is about to make a big trade. Marketplace's John Dimsdale has more.
It's called front-running. A mutual fund tells a broker to sell a big chunk of a company stock. The broker lets a favored customer in on the fact that the company's stock price is likely to fall. That customer, frequently a hedge fund that does a lot of business with the broker, dumps the stock, which drops the price. And that means the mutual fund loses money once its trade goes through. Mutual funds ask the SEC to investigate. Paul Stevens is with the Investment Company Institute, which represents the mutual fund industry. He says it's impossible to estimate how much front-running is going on.
Although, I guess from where I sit, thinking of the 94 million Americans that mutual funds serve, that any amount of this kind of activity is too much.
With billions of shares traded on U.S. exchanges every day, Stevens acknowledges policing insider trading is difficult. But it's the boom in fast-trading hedge funds that gives brokers the opportunity for front-running, according to Columbia University securities law professor John Coffey.
Those hedge funds are in competition with each other. They need to outperform the market by a substantial margin. And because they generate huge brokerage commissions, they have brokers falling over backwards to make them happy. And brokers can leak information about what their other clients are doing.
The SEC is reportedly looking at trades by major Wall Street brokers, including Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, and UBS, all of whom declined comment. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Congress was doing some investigating today into Iraqi reconstruction contracts. Eric Neela reports now that Paul Bremer was on the receiving end of Democrats' frustrations. Frustrations about more than just the contracts.
Paul Bremer ran the temporary government after the U.S. overthrow of Saddam Hussein. Since then, federal auditors found the authority lost track of most of the money. For example, Baltimore Democrat Elijah Cummings grilled Bremer about an American firm Bremer hired, an accounting firm with no accountants.
And would you be concerned or upset if you found out that there were no accountants on Northstar's staff? Would that concern you?
It would if it were true.
Turns out Northstar was run out of some guy's house in San Diego, according to Cummings. Bremer's appearance was also a chance for some members to question President Bush's new plan to send more money and troops to Iraq. This from California Democrat Diane Watson.
How can we, in good consciousness, say to our constituents, let's send them more money? There was no accountability then, and what guarantees do we have that it's going to be accounted for now?
Bremer defended himself.
I acknowledge that I made mistakes, and that with the benefit of hindsight, I would have made some decisions differently. But on the whole, I think we made great progress under some of the most difficult conditions imaginable.
The Special Inspector General for Iraq testified that Bremer's agency may have wasted billions, but he dismissed charges of widespread fraud. Still, corruption may be Bremer's legacy. The auditor told the panel $1 billion was recently diverted from the Iraqi oil ministry to insurgents. In Washington, I'm Eric Neeler for Marketplace.
There wasn't much happening to move the markets today, so the markets didn't really move. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. World's biggest retailer learned today it's also the biggest at something else, though Walmart would probably rather do without this particular honor. The company's going to have to defend itself against what will be the largest class action suit ever to go to trial in this country. A federal appeals court made the ruling. The suit claims as many as 1.5 million current or former female employees were discriminated against. The women say they were passed over for promotions and paid less than men were. The ruling took the wind out of the boost Walmart was expecting to get from its own big announcement this morning, the discount giant's getting into the movie download business, 3,000 videos, including television shows. And true to its business model, Walmart's offering the downloads for less than the competition does. But Pat Loeb reports that doesn't necessarily mean it'll be a success.
Mission Impossible was featured as the top movie on Walmart's spanking new media download site today as it announced a deal with 6 major Hollywood studios to sell their movies and TV shows digitally. They're the first retailer to do that. Douglas McIntyre, editor of 24/7 Wall Street, says the company goes into the video download business with a big advantage.
Walmart is probably one of the 30 or 40 most visited sites in the world, period, Walmart.com. So they start out with a level of scale that some of the sites like Cinema Now and Movie Link, they just can't match it.
That's not to say success is guaranteed. Walmart tried to get into the online video rental business a few years ago. It ended up throwing in the towel and directing customers to its rival, Netflix. And according to Todd Chanko, an analyst for Jupiter Research, there's a built-in challenge for the service.
Guess what? 92% of consumers said that they watch TV shows and movies on a TV. You know, only 6% of consumers say that they watch movies and TV shows on a PC.
Still, Chanko says, if there's even part of a dollar to be made on video downloads, Walmart's in a good position to make it. In Los Angeles, I'm Pat Loeb for Marketplace.
Walmart and everybody else are still trying to figure out how to profit from all the changes the digital economy's brought, movie downloads being just one example. But the simple plastic box at the heart of it all has been overlooked by most of us. Who cares what the outside of your PC looks like as long as it's got a fast chip inside, right? Well, Ethan Lindsay found some people who do care.
That is the sound of the next big thing in the computer business being built. You're hearing a table saw slicing pieces of a maple tree in the small warehouse of Holzkontor, a German company that sells computers built out of wood. Company owner Nicholas Schmidt says 12 years ago, he had an idea to make his computers match his furniture. He says at first, people didn't quite get it.
For our first 9 years, the question was always, why? Why does somebody need this?
But in the past 3 years, Schmidt says business has really started to grow. He explains that he doesn't build the computer chips inside of your desktop. He builds retro computer cases that look like something out of the TV program Antiques Roadshow. Schmidt sees himself like one of those guys who makes a living customizing and tricking out cars, only with computers. He says today's customers feel that their computers, much like their cars, say something about who they are. Online, Austin, Texas engineer Joshua Driggs goes by the name Zap Wizard. He's what's known as a modder, someone who modifies his home computer. He's so into the wooden computer idea, he built one himself.
Runs along the same lines as anybody doing custom cars, custom motorcycles, any type of custom work where you involve a lot of art with a lot of technical skill.
Nelson Gonzalez is the CEO of computer maker Alienware.
Well, it's interesting. We started out as hot rodders, right? So if there's our car analogy. We started off as hot rodders, and now we've been able to design our own products, if you will, our own chassis. So that makes us more of like a Ferrari or like a Porsche. It's really interesting how we've kind of grown up throughout the years.
Gonzalez started his company in the mid-90s as an excuse to make money while playing games and tooling with computers. But his business proved to be a success financially as well.
The Badger has a driver's seat and a gunner seat. Breast change view.
And last year, Dell Computer bought out Alienware. Then Dell rival Hewlett-Packard bought out a similar company named Voodoo PC. Like auto freaks in their car shows, computer geeks have network parties. Every year, thousands of modders and gamers meet at the biggest network party of all, QuakeCon in Texas. It's where hardcore gamers show up, along with their own computers, and then connect all their computers together on a network to play games against one another. Nowadays, on the fringes of QuakeCon are reps from Dell and HP looking for the cool new thing. Driggs sees them as party crashers.
Custom computers and, to some point, modding has become mainstream to the point that you can't go to CompUSA and buy a beige box anymore.
But Schmidt, the German wood computer maker, says modders like Driggs have no idea how mainstream it's already gotten. Schmidt notes that 12 years ago, he was struggling to find buyers. But now, just take a look at the names on the top of his customer list.
And I know that Hillary Clinton have a system for me.
In Neustadt, Germany, I'm Ethan Lindsay for Marketplace.
We've got some pictures of those retro computers at our website. It's marketplace.org. It's a funny world where Porsche's a luxury brand and Mercedes isn't. But that's the way the numbers worked out in a new World Luxury Index from the German stock market operator Deutsche Börse. It'll sell those ratings on everything from sunglass manufacturers to high-end hotels. The luxury market's been booming for the past couple of years. But people who work in that sector don't often make salaries on a par with the products they're pushing or with the people they're pushing them to. Yale sociologist Rachel Sherman did some hands-on research into that at some luxury hotels. She's not saying which ones, but she says she did everything from housekeeping to working the concierge desk. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
When you think about luxury goods, it's really interesting because you can have a bag that costs $5,000 or you can drive a really nice car, but there is something, and I don't know what it is because I haven't stayed in a whole lot of them, but there is something about a five-star hotel.
Yes, there is. And I have some ideas about what that something is. I mean, mainly the interactive service that you receive in the hotel, you know, not just the linens being nice or the amenities or the aesthetics of the hotel, but in fact, the service that you get is highly personalized. You know, they know your name. They might know your pet's name. They know what kind of food you like, lots of special things about how you want your experience to be. They, you know, are basically there to attend to your every need. They never say no. You know, they break rules for you. And they are sincere in their attention to your needs.
In all the time you spent with the service staffs in these hotels, they must have vented to you and said, I can't believe that guy who checked in today. I mean, what is their reaction to some of these people?
Well, that's actually what I was most interested in writing the book and doing the research, was how it was that workers responded to, you know, this sort of imperative to really pamper the guests, as well as the obviousness of the fact that the guests were many, many, many times wealthier than the workers themselves. And what I found was it's certainly true that workers will vent and complain about individual guests, but really the more important thing, I think, is that guests really treat these workers very well, which I was surprised by. They tip them, they're gracious to them, they're thoughtful, sometimes they even bring them gifts, and there are many frequent guests in luxury hotels with whom interactive workers can develop friendships or sort of ongoing relationships. And that's the thing, I think, that allows workers to not think so much about their subordination to guests, but rather to think of themselves as equal to guests.
Where does management fit into this equation? You have luxury hotel guests, you have luxury hotel staff, and then I imagine sort of the butter between those two slices of bread is management making it all work.
Well, it's interesting because certainly management plays a big role in the experience of workers, obviously setting, you know, wages and disciplinary procedures. But at the same time, I would emphasize, and I think this is true of service work beyond the luxury hotel, that when you're a customer in a service enterprise, you are exerting a managerial function. You know, it's not, the managers aren't always between the workers and the clients in the bread and butter kind of analogy. They actually have independent relationships with workers, and they're setting the conditions under which workers are going to work a lot of the time. And workers who are tipped, of course, are actually being directly paid by guests or clients as well.
Listen, before I let you go, if things don't work out at Yale, would you go back to hotel work?
I would consider it.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed these jobs, and I felt a lot of camaraderie with the workers. I'm not sure that I could do it long term just because of these issues of inequality that I've been talking about, but you never know.
Rachel Sherman is, for now anyway, a professor of sociology at Yale University. Her book on service and inequality in luxury hotels is called Class Acts. Professor Sherman, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
Coming up, when the kindness of strangers is big business.
This provides an interesting avenue where borrowers and lenders can help one another out and bypass the whole banking system.
But first, let's do the numbers. More standing around on Wall Street today. The Dow Industrials put on 4 points, basically flat at 12,666. The NASDAQ closed where it began at 2,471. The S&P 500 added a point, less than a tenth percent, to finish at 1,448. Bank stocks rose a bit. Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, and Bear Stearns each added up to a percent to the kitty. Merrill Lynch raised its targets on Goldman, Lehman, and Bear Stearns. Citigroup evidently rose just in solidarity, I suppose. Avon Products powdered up nearly 10%. The world's largest direct seller of cosmetics reported higher than expected fourth quarter profits. It's going ahead with a restructuring program, and investors evidently like the company's new look. Before the bell, investors pushed Cisco Systems lower by 0.8%. After the bell, Cisco reported a second quarter surge in profits, beating analysts' estimates. Its shares lost some more in after-hours trading, if you can figure that one out. Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note ticked down to 4.77%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Since 1937, managing money with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. And by the Redwoods Group, for supporting the Innovations Desk at North Carolina Public Radio. Heard a report on Marketplace that you just have to share with your friends, family, or coworkers? Help is just a click away. Our website has each day's complete newscast, individual stories, and transcripts, so you can listen again, print them out, or email them to everyone you know. It's all at marketplace.org.
V
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Wednesday. In Washington, the Federal Reserve Board reports on consumer credit for December. The Senate Rules and Administration Committee discusses improving electronic election systems. And an enduring character of American cinema debuted on February 7, 1914. Charlie Chaplin appeared in his tramp role in Kid Auto Races at Venice. The mischievous cane-twirling chap was a silent film success that carried into talkies. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. American organized labor is not what it used to be. Competition for jobs and the threat of cheaper imports have taken away unions' bargaining power. It's tougher to start a union, too. Today, California Democrat George Miller introduced a bill in the House that would penalize companies that violate an employee's ability to organize. Commentator Beth Shulman says it's about more than just workers' rights.
Today, profits and productivity are up. But we've got the worst income inequality since the Gilded Age. Wages are stagnating, pensions and health care coverage nosediving. Working people can no longer afford many of the products and services they make or provide. Unions that help create the large post-war middle class are disappearing, and it's no accident. Today, unions represent only 7% of the private sector workforce, down from 35% during the heyday of the large middle class. Unions are one of the most important tools we have for restoring and preserving the middle class, and private industry has been waging war on them. Fully one out of every four workers who try to organize a union get fired. A majority of unorganized workers say they'd join a union if they had a chance. But most won't, because employers routinely harass, threaten, and fire union organizers. But look at what a difference a union makes. Research shows that unions raise most workers' wages by 20%. In traditionally low-wage jobs like security guards, childcare workers, and nursing home aides, unionized workers earn 27% more than their non-union counterparts. Not to mention that 86% of union workers get employer health benefits compared to half of non-union workers. They're also five times more likely than non-union members to have guaranteed pension plans. Plus, unions remind politicians that average families need to pay rent, get health care, time off, and a pension to retire in dignity. Instead, in recent decades, we've seen the elimination of the middle class. If we want service jobs to be the middle class jobs of the 21st century, just as auto and steel jobs were the middle class jobs of the 20th, we need strong unions. Without them, soon, we'll have no middle class at all.
Beth Shulman is the author of The Betrayal of Work. If you've got some thoughts you'd care to share with us, go to marketplace.org. Click on that link that says contact. Take a quick look at that credit card in your wallet or the statement from your home equity line of credit. On the face of it, they're icons of how much you owe. But there are also money-making opportunities for the companies that sent them to you. Banks and credit card companies and those payday loan centers make billions of dollars every year lending us money. But why should they get all the profit? Marketplace's Amy Scott checked out a new way to borrow and lend.
Stop wasting my time.
Let's say I could really use some money, but my credit isn't so hot and I've got some unpaid bills. I could try to get a bank loan, not likely. I could go to one of those payday loan centers and pay a few 100% interest. Or I could go to Prosper.com.
Give me some money. Give me some money.
Prosper is one of a few so-called peer-to-peer lending sites. It matches people who need money with those who have it. Take Tori Shannon. She wanted to pay off some debt and expand her lingerie business, so she posted a profile on the website. She described her loan request and how she planned to pay it back. The profile also listed her credit grade, high risk, and explained why. Her husband had been seriously wounded in Iraq, and she had a bankruptcy in her past. But she was willing to pay 22% interest. Lenders then had a chance to bid on Shannon's loan in increments as small as $50. Eventually, more than 30 people lent her a total of $6,000.
For me to go into a bank, they would probably give me 15 minutes of their time, determine that I'm not a good risk, and say, sorry, can't help you. Whereas on Prosper, it would be a situation, well, tell me a little bit more about it. What exactly happened? Okay, how are you going to prevent that from happening again?
It seems fitting that Prosper's headquarters in San Francisco are down the street from Charles Schwab, the company famous for democratizing investing. Prosper founder Chris Larson says he wanted to do for the consumer debt market what eBay had done for commerce.
It's really kind of giving the power of underwriting, the power of where does capital get allocated directly to individuals.
Individuals like Perry Heinrich. He's a software engineer from Baltimore. Heinrich has lent $600 on Prosper to a dozen different borrowers. The site recommends making small loans to several people to spread the risk around. Heinrich admits he was first attracted by the handsome interest rates, but what's really got him hooked is helping people down on their luck.
If you put your money in a CD or a money market fund, you can earn 5% at a bank. And if your neighbor down the street is paying, you know, 15 or 20 or 30% on their credit cards, this provides an interesting avenue where borrowers and lenders can help one another out and bypass the whole banking system.
It does take a lot of faith, though. Heinrich says out of his 12 borrowers, 3 are behind on their payments. Prosper provides a collection service if things get out of hand. The company celebrates its first anniversary next week. So far, its members have loaned a total of almost $35 million. About 3% of those loans are at least 3 months late. Even the most compelling cases can't always live up to their promises. That's why lender Carl Waldman says he doesn't even read borrowers' stories. He has the system bid automatically on loans that match a certain profile.
Because there's no way to verify what they put on the webpage. It's not even worth the time to read it.
Back in her dining room slash office, Tori Shannon shows off the fruits of her Prosper loan.
This is a cupless corset. There's no coverage in certain areas.
The corset is one of the products she sells on her website. So far, Shannon is living up to her promise. Her first monthly payment was due at the end of last month. She's already paid through April. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note, we started with hubris, might as well end with it too. Apple CEO Steve Jobs said today he thinks music companies ought to do away with digital copyright protections. The technical term here is digital rights management. It's what companies put on downloadable music to stop it from being copied illegally. Apple, we ought to note here, puts special protections on its iTunes downloads so that they can't be copied to anything other than an iPod. No news on this just yet from the record labels, but we'll keep you posted. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Nary a wave on the sea of Wall Street today. The Dow gained 4 points, closing flat. The NASDAQ gained less than a point. We'll call that flat. The S&P 500 picked up a point. Altogether now, yes, flat. Thanks today to Brian Watt and Miguel Macias on our Morning Report crew. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by Wendy Sykes. Next time on this program, the mining village that's booming since coal left town.
I would say probably one in every 10 are probably traveling back and forth. They work six on, and they fly them home for 2 weeks, so they find that a little easier now compared to being out there all year round.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.